Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. B'maaseh Yodeha, that the father has rights in the output of his daughter. Minalon, how do we know that? Damar Avuhun Amarav, minayin shemaseh abat la'av. How do we know that the production or the output of the daughter belongs to the father? Shenamar v'chim korish et bito le'ama. If a person chooses to sell his daughter as an ama viria, ma ama maseh yodeh l'rabba. The reason that he's selling her as an amai priya, or why the adon, the master, is purchasing her, is for her productivity, for the output that she will have. So if he has a right to realize the present value of that output, abat maseya de la avia, then certainly if she stays with her father, then he has rights to collect that productivity. If he can monetize it by selling it to the adon, then certainly he himself is entitled to it. My says, vein mahani mile ktana. That may be true with regards to a ketana, the matzi mezavin la, because he has a right to sell her. Alvin ne'ara, the lo matzi mezavin la, maseya de'a dida. But on the other hand, by a ne'ara, who he does not have a right to sell, because we know that from the Kal v'chomer, that if she was ready an ama avriya, she goes free at the age of a ne'ara, then certainly he can't put her into being an ama avriya at the age of being a ne'ara. He can't sell her at that point. So the Kal v'chomer does not exist then. And if that's the case, we can't prove that the father has rights in the output of his daughter when it comes to the time of Narut. Mar says, Mistavra Davia Havu. Mar says, it's logical that it belongs to the father. Di Sakadat Chwa Maseh Deh Lav Davia. Because if you really believe that her output did not belong to her father, Elaha Dezachi Le Rachman Ala Av, the Mimser El Chupa, the fact that the Torah granted the right to the father to give her over to the Chupa, to marry her off, and get her to the point of Nisuin. Rashi over here claims the source for that is from the Parshat Motzi Shemra, which says at Beti Natati Leisha Zeh, that I gave my daughter over to this man. And that is Kol Nitzinot Sheba. He has all the rights, all the giving rights in her. He can marry off, have Nisuin. Others say that it's simply logical that he can do that. Because if he is Zocheh, or he has the ability to be Mekadesh her, that'd only be valuable if he could also be Moser her the Chupa. If he can't be Moser the Chupa, what is the fact that he can be Mekadisher have any impact if he cannot consummate to have that reach the point in his suin? Sehechi matzi maser la. If that's the case, that he has the right to grant to the daughter over to the other party, then how can he do this if her output or her production belonged to herself? Haka mevatala mimaseya da. Because then he is causing her to be batel, to miss out on her opportunity for making money on those days when he gives her over to the chupa. If that right belonged to her, and he had the right to be Moser l'chupa, then you'd have a problem, because when he's Moser l'chupa, she should be able to veto that, because she'll say, that's going to impinge on my ability to produce and have money. And therefore she could reject the father's giving over to the chupa by the mere fact that she is then losing out on her ability to make money. So from that, the Gemara says, it's obvious that the father has the right to her output, because otherwise he couldn't be mevatel her from that output in order to marry her off. So Baruch Rav Achai says, maybe that's not true. Ema d'yayiv lo schar peketa? Maybe he pays her back. He pays her back for her needing to desist from work during the time of the chupa. He'll pay her for being unemployed during that period of time. Inami, the maser lo b'leilya. Or that they have the chupa he gives over at nighttime when there is no bitul malacha. Obviously in their day, especially where there was no electricity, there was no lighting at night, nobody worked at night. So certainly over there is no bitul malacha that he would have to compensate her for or worry about. Inami de maser la b'shabbatot v'yamim tovim. Or that he gave her over on Shabbat and Yom Tov, where obviously there's an iser malacha, and therefore there wouldn't be any question of being mevatel her from malacha. Tosafot over here asks a very, very basic question we saw in the Gemara in Moed Katan, that a person is not allowed to get married on Yom Tov. It's an iser d'oraita, which is v'samachto b'chagecha v'lo b'ishtecha. So there's no way that she could be getting married on Yom Tov. So what is even the Gemara suggesting over here that she's getting married on Shabbat and Yom Tov? So Tosafot over here gives two possible answers. One answer is that it's actually on Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov. And despite the fact that there is no Isser Malacha then, he says either because of Tosefet Shabbat and Tosefet Yom Tov, we would classify it as if there is a certain amount of Isser Malacha then, because it's a period of time where you could have Tosefet Shabbat and Tosefet Yom Tov. So she's getting married right before Shabbat and Yom Tov. Or there is a practice to desist from doing work late on the day or in the afternoon of an Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov not meikar halacha, but because one may not engage in melachot that might drag out or go into Shabbat or be stopped in the middle, and therefore one has to desist from those types of work. So because of that, they might be mevatel mimelacha, not because of the ikar din of Shabbat and Yom Tov, but in the preparatory stages of Shabbat and Yom Tov. We saw that in the Gemara as well, the fact that Eliyahu and Avi won't come to be mevaser about Mashiach on Erev Yom Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov, because everybody's asuk and getting ready for Shabbat and Yom Tov, and therefore they're not at work. They're already stopped work. They're focusing on the preparations for Shabbat and Yom Tov. So that's one possibility. Or Tosafot makes an interesting suggestion, which is that there's nisuin without su'uda. That the only problem on Yom Tov is getting married and having a su'uda, because that's a simcha yeterah, and that clashes with the simcha ta'chag, with the simcha ta'yom tov. On the other hand, if you just have nisuin without the su'uda, even though there is some simcha there, it's not enough simcha to clash with the Yom Tov, and therefore it would be permissible. Interesting ideas, but Tosafot is trying to deal with the issue of why Shabbat and Yom Tov are mentioned over here when it's clear, midoraito, that one cannot get married on Yom Tov, and likely on Shabbat as well, one cannot get married, partly because of the takanot of writing in Kiddushin on Shabbat, but also possibly because of the problems of Kinyanim on Shabbat itself. Although, again, the practice was, and we mentioned this, early Masechta to get married on Erev Shabbat, and then have the Suda be the dual Suda, the Sudat Nisuin, as well as the Sudat Shabbat, be joined together in order to save money, because they really didn't have so much. So there is this practice that was very common to get married on Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov, and that might be what the Gemara is referencing to over here. Where it says, so therefore you can't prove from the fact that he has a right to marry her off, that he has a right to her output, because we could come up with cases where there's no clash between him marrying her off and her losing her output. Elektana lo tzricha kra. For ktana, we don't need a pasuk. Hashta zvuni mizavinla. If he can sell her, maseya de mi boy, then you have to tell me that he's entitled to her output. Elkeitz tichra linara. But what do we need the pasuk for? We need the pasuk for a ne'ara, to teach us about a ne'ara. As Rashi says, vafagav diker kra biktana aktiv. Even though the pasuk is really speaking about a ktana, mi akra yeteruhu. Nevertheless, it's an extraneous pasuk, tichtiv la'ama. Lakushe bali ama lekeisha dinara atyo. There's an extraneous piece that it says le ama, which wasn't necessary over here. Kimkor ishet bito le ama, and that extraneous word or phrase is what gives us the hint that we're not just talking about a ktana over here, but we're talking about a ne'ara. So even though the pashtura pasuk is talking about a ktana, nevertheless, since it was unnecessary to teach us about a bito vis-a-vis an ama when she's a ktana, because he can sell her, of course he gets her output. That's just a logical outcome. Then the pasuk that we were doresh, that taught us that he has the rights to the Masei Yadayim, is obviously talking about a ne'ara, and that's how we know that the father is entitled both to the output of the ktana as well as that of the ne'ara. Be'afarat nidareha, he has the right to nullify her nidarim. Minolan, how do we know that? Dichtiv bin ne'ureha beit avia. That's what we darshened in yesterday's daf, that kol shevach ne'ura the avia, that anything or any part of her production or any outcome vis-a-vis her is in her father's hands. As Rashi points out, v'chit eima behejaktiv, doesn't the pasuk explicitly say that? Here the Gemara is going after a pasuk that seems to hint at this. The psukim that talk about hafarat nidarim explicitly say that the father has a right to be nullify his daughter's nidarim, because it says ki ini aviota ilav hai havamina biktana mishtai. Rashi says, because if we only had one pasuk and one limud, we would assume that it's talking about a ktana. Now that we have two limudim, one limud, or one of them tells us that a ktana, he has the rights to nullify, and the second pasuk, then we'll assume it's talking about a ne'ara, and that teaches us that both the ktana and ne'ara, the father has that right of nullification with regards to her nidarim. Umikabelet gita, he can accept the get on her behalf. Minolon, how do we know if that's the case? Diktiv, v'yatza, v'hayta. Says there in the psukim, yatzav ha'ita li'ish acher, if she leaves or divorces and then goes out to another man, itkish yitzia lahavaya. Over there, there's a hekesh between leaving and marrying. Havaya is the kiddushin, the getting married. Yitzia is the divorce. Since they are juxtaposed there in one shot, that she is yatza and then haita, we learn from that just like he has rights in her kiddushin, he also has rights in the acceptance of the get. Veino chel perot b'chaya. And he does not eat perot in her lifetime. As opposed to the Baal, who gets perot from the Nichsei Melog that she brings into the marriage, or any property that she owns independently, The father does not get that, and all the payroll have to be then placed into a skula, into an escrow for the daughter. Tanabanan, ha'avinu l'chel b'pirot b'chaye bito. Father does not have the rights to the output of the fields that his daughter owns. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda omer, ha'avu chel pirot b'chaye bito. The other hand, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda thinks the father does have that right. B'mai kamithlege, what are they arguing about? Tanakama savar bishlama baal takinule rabbanan peire. They instituted peirot for the baal, dimkein, because if they didn't do that, mimna velo parik, then he would not redeem the girl. We're going to see later on today's daf that seemingly the peirot, which are granted to the husband, are in exchange for him redeeming her if she's taken into captivity. So what we're afraid is, if we tell him to redeem her from captivity, we want to give him something quid pro quo that he benefits from in order to do that. So we grant him the peirot in order to redeem her. Ela'av ma'igal le'meimar. When it comes to a father, what are you going to say? De'mimna v'lo parik? He's going to hold back and not redeem his daughter? Of course he's going to redeem her daughter. But lo hachi parik la, he's going to do it anyway. So we don't have to grant him that additive incentive in order to redeem her. And therefore, the peirot do not belong to the father. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda savar, av nami mimna v'lo parik. Even a father will not redeem her because he'll say, Savar kisa nikita ilava. She's wearing her money pouch around her. Tizel v'tifrok nafsha. Let her redeem herself. She has her own property. She's making money off that property. Let her take care of herself. Why do I have to pay out to take care of her? So it's a machloket about how the father will feel vis-a-vis the daughter in instances where she has, in a sense, her own bank account, where she has an escrow and where she is accumulating money, and that the Tanakamo believes that the father will do it anyway, and therefore there's no entitlement to payrot. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says, no, we can't count on the father to do it, and therefore we have to grant him payrot as well. In addition to that, the Rishonim speak about the fact that we also grant payrot to the husband in order that he'll take care of the woman's property. The woman's property here, if we wanted to protect the value of that property and he'll invest in the property, he's only going to do that if he has some vested interest in the property. So we give him the leasehold on the property so that the output of the property is his and he'll invest in the property to make it better, and that'll preserve the underlying principle for the woman. So we have him get the payrot in order to incentivize him to take care of the property. By the father, we don't need that incentive because he's going to take care of the property anyway for his daughter. And again, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda will disagree and say, no, the father, if he sees that his daughter's got her own property and her own production, she could invest in her own property. He doesn't have to take care of it. Let her take care of it herself. And therefore, we would grant the father peirot. Niseit, yeter lav abal, shuochel peirot. So again, we said when she gets married, then the husband has these additional items, whether some of them are zchuyot, rights, and other of them are chovot, obligations that come with rights that come together, a quid pro quo for them, above the father. Tanu Rabbanan, katav la perot ksut v'kelim. The father granted as an edunya for his daughter going into the marriage. He granted her all these items. She'avo imam b'beit avia l'beit bala, that she'll bring in from her father's house into her husband's house. So these are part of the dowry that is being brought into the marriage. Meta, and then she dies. Lo zacha habao b'dvarim halalu. The husband does not get rights into these items. Mishum Rabbi Natan amru zacha habao b'dvarim halalu. On the other hand, Rabbi Natan believes that the husband does get rights in these matters. There is a fundamental machloket over here between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam. It's really Rashi and the Rabbeinu Hananel and many of the Rishonim versus the Rabbeinu Tam, who believe, what is the case over here? Rashi claims we're talking about an arusa, and the father wrote these properties at the time of the erusin. He granted them to the daughter, and she dies prior to nisuin. And therefore, the machloket here between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Natan is because they didn't get married. They didn't have nisuin. So the question is, at the point of Erusin, what is the thought process of the father in granting these items? Does he grant them no matter what? Or does he only grant them on the condition that there will be a marriage or a Nisuin in the end? Based on that, then Rashi believes if there was Nisuin, everybody would agree that that's a given, that whatever the father granted as part of the dowry, once the marriage goes through, even if the daughter dies right then, right after the marriage, or right after Nisuin, before there's even Biyah, that it would all be given to the husband in that case. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam asks numerous questions on Rashi and this interpretation, and therefore he comes to an alternate conclusion that we're talking about Nisuin over here. And the Machloket is actually about Nisuin, and here everybody agrees, seemingly by Erusin, that they wouldn't get it, but by Nisuin they're arguing about how much or how far does it have to go before the father agrees that it's granted to the husband. And as the Rabbeinu Tam explains over here, the time of the Lozocha, the Tanakama, even after Nisuin, why does the Tanakama believe that the father doesn't grieve over the dowry of the Nidunya? Shem the Anan Sade, because we are witness to the fact, meaning that we know the only reason the father gave this is the Ein Data Avli Tein Nidunya Zu El Menachet Tehaneb Nuam Bitomi Mena. As only if his daughter gets some benefit from it, Kamo Abal, at the same as the Baal. He doesn't intend to give it, so just the husband gets benefit from it, and his daughter never gets any benefit from it. But Rabbi Natan says, we don't look at things in that way. We don't make an umdana. We don't assume. The father made it, never made it state that fact. And therefore, Nisuin is the time period when the Nidunya becomes effective. And it doesn't matter that the daughter then, unfortunately, passed away. It still goes to the husband. We don't start making cheshbonot about what the father was thinking. We just say, that's the threshold. Nisuin is when everything transfers. And it happens whether or not the daughter is there after that point in time. On the other hand, the Tanakama says that you gotta look at the circumstances. The father's clearly not trying to gift something to this son-in-law. He's trying to give something to his daughter, which his daughter can enjoy together with the son-in-law. If the daughter's not there, then the son-in-law shouldn't get the items. Now, the Gemara continues and says, Lema Bapluta de Rabbelozer ben Azari Rabbanan Kamiflege. Let us say that this machloket between the Tanakama and Rabbi Natan is similar to a machloket that we have between Rabbelozer ben Azari and the Rabbanan. Titznan, nit armila o nit garsha. If she was widowed or divorced, ben min nisuim, ben min ayirusin. Whether it happened from nisuin or ayirusin, govat hakol. He gets to collect everything. Rabbi Elazar ben Azari omer, min nisuin govat hakol, min ayirusin betula gova mataim, v'amana maneh. So according to the Tanakama, the Rabbanon over here, when the husband passes away, she's entitled to the entire ketubah. That means the 100 or 200 core part of the ketubah, plus the Tosefet HaKetubah that was added in by the husband, whether it happened at the point of Erusin, whether it happened at the point of Nisuin. And quid pro quo for that, the husband will inherit the wife, the Nidunya, the dowry that the father placed into the Ketubah, that the husband should also inherit, whether it's in the Erusin or whether it's at the point of Nisuin. There should be equality over here. If the husband dies and the woman is able to collect on everything, so too, if the woman dies, the husband should be able to collect on everything. And here we see no differentiation between Erusin and Nisuin. If she's fully married, if it's Nisuin, then you collect everything. But if it's from the Erusin, they only get the core ketubah, which is the 100 or 200 zuz that is placed into the ketubah, but they're not entitled to the Tosefet HaKetubah, because the Tosefet HaKetubah is only for Nisuin. And similarly, the Nidunya, the dowry that's placed in by the father, will also only be triggered by Nisuin. So let's align these Shitot and say that they are saying the same thing. Because, Shelo Katav Laila Menat Lekonsa. Because as Rabbi Elazar ben Azari explains, he only gave her the Tosefet HaKetubah on the premise or the condition that they will get married. Even though that's not written explicitly, but it's understood that the Tosefet HaKetubah is really only triggered by Nisuin. Because in general, there is no ketubah by Erusin. The ketubah is really associated with the Nisuin. So if there's a ketubah, we're only going to talk about the core ketubah at the point of Erusin. But the Tosefet HaKetubah is clearly connected to the Nisuin. The way the Rabbeinu Tam explains it is, just like we saw that Rabbi Natan makes an umdana by the dowry to assume that the father would not give the property to them after Nisuin if the daughter dies right away because he wants them both to benefit from it. So he'd make an umdana, so too Rabbi Elazar ben Azari does the same thing here. He makes an umdana, an assumption about what the thought process of the husband was. Even though it's not written explicitly, he makes that assumption. And therefore we're going to parallel both of those shitot, which both make this assumption that we speak on their behalf to what their intentions were in this case. Versus the Rabbanon or the Tanakama, who say, whatever's there is there. If it's written, you get it. Whether it's the time of Erusin or whether it's the time of Nisuin. Namandam arlo zacha. Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, the one who says that the husband is not zuche in the dowry, he'll be like Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria. Uman damar zacha. Tanakama, who says that he is entitled to the dowry from either the time of Erusin, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, the time of Nisuin, he'll like the Rabbonon. Where it says, lo, tukule alma ki Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria. Everybody holds like Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria. Man damar lo zacha. The one who says that you're not zuche, Rabbi Natan, ki Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria. He holds like Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria. Just like the woman is not zucha in the Tosefet HaKetubah, So too, the husband's not entitled to the dowry until the time of Nisuin. On the Mandar Marzacha, now then the Tanakamu says that he is entitled to it. Because there is a difference between from him to her. Because when it comes from his side, because when the husband writes it, he only writes the Tosevra Ktuba with the intention of marrying her. On the other hand, when it goes from her to him, meaning the dowry to him, even Rabbi Elazar and Azariah will agree, Mishum Ichtune Hu. It's because of the Chatuna. Vaha Ichtane Luhu. And that went through. Now, this is one of the Rabbeinu Tam's major claims against Rashi, which is the term of Chatuna, or Ichtune, is really associated with Nisuin and not Erusin. And therefore, it sounds like over here, the reason that it was done is because of Nisuin, and here the Nisuin was completed. So that favors the Rabbeinu Tam's pshat. Again, Rashi explains that Uchtune means Erusin, or the completion of Erusin, and then many of the Rishonim defend Rashi and Rashi's interpretation that we see in other places the word Chatuna or Ichtune is used more loosely than simply Nisuin, but anything in the process of marriage, and therefore could also reference Erusin and not just the Nisuin over here. And as Tosfo points out over here, it's not that this was an explicit condition in the Ketubah. In the Tmua B'svara Zot, the Kama Mekomot B'Shas, Matzinu Kein, find many places in Shas. V'im Tomar, Im Kein, Kol Adam Lokeach Para Mechaveiro, anybody purchases something from his friend, V'nitrifo Meita, he finds it a trefor, dies, he say, Anan Tzade, we can say, oh, I didn't buy it for that reason. I didn't buy it for this to happen to it. So why can't we say that this is an inherent condition in any purchase? So Tosfot says, V'yishlamar, the hatam anan sade, shibato safek hayarotzeli kanes. When the buyer goes in and buys it, that's part of the purchase. The purchase is this safek, or this underlying safek. He knows that the animal may die. It may be a trefer, baby meta, and he accepts that in the purchase. And that's what we're anan sade about. Aval hacha lo katav klal, kima menato konsa, vein dato klal achnitza smo b'safek. Over here, the husband would not put himself and take a risk and say, oh, I'll give this money even if this woman doesn't marry me. It's clear that his only intention in putting the extra tosevet into the ketubah is for the fact that this woman is going to marry him. And so therefore the anan sadeh over here is much stronger because people would not enter an agreement like this bisafek. They would only enter an agreement like this in certainty or with certitude that they will actually get to the outcome. And therefore it's different than other cases of purchases. And it's really more of a condition. It's not a mekach taut. It's really a built-in t'nai to the ketubah itself, or the granting of the ketubah, which is the husband is obviously thinking he's going to marry this woman. And he's not thinking that maybe he won't marry this woman. He doesn't accept it in that manner, as opposed to normal purchases where the buyer takes on the risk of the product. Now, sometimes it's warranted by the seller for a certain period of time, but if it's not warranted by the seller, then the buyer accepts the risk that this item could break down. And in the end, the Rabbeinu Tam actually has an interesting comment over here. He says, despite the fact that the Gemara says that everybody can hold like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, nevertheless, the Rabbeinu Tam says that originally we thought Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Natan were parallel shitot. And even though the Gemara went back or retracted that position, nevertheless, that is the Ikar Halacha. And the Gemara's Dechuya is just that. It's a Dechuya. It's not the real Halacha. And therefore, the Halacha is like Rabbi Natan. And the Rabbeinu Tam paskan alocha like that. V'orei Rabbeinu Tam alocha l'maseh b'chatan echad shemeta ishto. V'hi avi akala muchzak b'nedunya. It was a case where they got married and then the woman died and the father was still holding on to the dowry. Pasak delo zacha baal. The baal doesn't get this mikolach shmaitin because Rabbi Natan says that it's not enough that they got married. It's not enough that they have nisuin. They have to have nisuin plus they have to live together. The daughter has to get some benefit from the dowry. That's not going to happen over here. And therefore, the husband has no rights in the dowry. So this is Rabbeinu Tam l'shitato. First of all, that are sugyus time at Nisuin. And number two, that the locha is like Rabbi Natan. V'ot kein. And in addition to that, he added on another halacha, which is not a halacha mitoch a sugya, but a takana. The tekein lo mikoach halacha shefilu baal mukzak. That even if the husband already has the dowry, sheyachzir imeta b'toch shana. If the woman dies within the first year, that the husband should return the dowry to the father. At the end of his lifetime, he retracted that takana, but he also felt, it's not mikra halacha, Rabbi Natan just says they have to have some time or some benefit from this according to the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam extended it to a whole year. But later on in his life, he retracted that position and went back to the ikra halacha. But it's interesting because it really gets into the psychology of how people give or why they give. Plus, how do we get people to give more? If we want a father to give a larger dowry, if we give him in some way a warranty that it will only go to the benefit of his daughter and not just to his son-in-law, then he may be more likely to give a more generous dowry. Because he knows that if his daughter dies in the first year of marriage, then he'll get the money back or the dowry would be annulled. On the other hand, if he thinks that he might lose it if the daughter dies, he might give less. Part of this psychology is trying to understand how we get the father to give a larger dowry, which will help the daughter get married, but also cause that the father feels that the dowry is safe because his daughter will actually benefit from that. So it's interesting that Takana that Rabbeinu Tam tried to institute that he later retracted, but it's also Rabbeinu Tam l'shitato, and obviously the other Rishonim will believe that this whole Gemara is talking about Erusin. None of this is relevant because they all agree that once you hit Nisuin, everybody agrees that the husband gets the dowry, and there's no question here, and obviously they would disagree halacha l'maaseh with the Rabbeinu Tam. Chayav b'mizonotah. He is obligated to provide her mizonot. Tanrabanan, tiknu mizonotah tachet maaseh yadah. So here is this quid pro quo, which is that the husband provides mizonot for the woman, and she gives maaseh yadah. She gives her output to the husband. Ukvurata tachat ketubata. And the fact that the husband inherits her ketubah, that he is then obligated to bury her. We've spoken about this a number of times. Again, we saw this in Gemara and Yevamot. Since he is the inheritor of her ketubah, he's also the responsible party for her kvura. The fikach. Because of that, Baal ochol peirot. The Baal eats the peirot. Gemara says, peirot mandagar shmayu. Where did you ever mention peirot in this braita? All we mentioned here were mizonot, maseyada, and kvura and ketubah. I don't see the word peirot here. It says, chasure mechsero. The braita is missing. V'hachiktani. Tiknu mizonotah tachat maseyada. Mizonot in exchange for maseyadaim. Pirkuna tachat peirot. The need for the husband to redeem his wife if she's taken into captivity. In exchange for the peirot, the output of the fields that she owns or things that she owns. And kvurata tachat ketubata. Lafikach. For that reason, baal ochel peirot. The husband eats peirot. Ma lafikach. What does it mean, therefore? Ma'udateima micha lo nichlinu anuchei nanchinu. Maybe we would think that he can't eat them, but he has to leave them over. Which is a strange suggestion, because if he's not eating them and leaving them over, then what benefit is he getting from them? And Tosfot says that basically over here, he can keep the property in escrow until he needs it. If he runs out of parnoso, then he can dip into that rainy day account. But otherwise, the ninchinu would be that he leaves it until that point in time. He can't regularly take it out of there. It's only an emergency fund that he can dip into. There are those that suggest, I think the Ritva mentions, that he takes this and purchases karka with these peirot, and then he eats the output of that additional karka, not the original peirot. So therefore, there's something left in escrow for her. Plus, he does get some benefit from it, but he does not get the ikar benefit of the leasehold on the original property, and that's what the Gemara is suggesting. Kamash Malon, that we don't say that, Daha Difa, because this setup is better. Zimnen Delo Malu, because if we did leave it over, and therefore she had basically assets collected, then they wouldn't add up. Uparik Lami Dide, and therefore she would not get redeemed. But if he eats the peirot, and she wouldn't have had enough money, he'll throw in his own money in order to redeem her. So what we're saying here is that if we have him save all the output from the original field, then he's basically going to say, look, she has all that she needs. That's her money. Let that take care of her if she needs to be redeemed. And if we let him eat the peirot, he probably won't track it so carefully. Plus, he gets it now and in the future. And therefore, he'll be willing to add in his own money here because he won't have such a strong accounting of exactly what he's getting and what he's giving. Plus, he'll feel that he has a benefit. There is some sort of quid pro quo here, and therefore, he'll be more willing to add in and pay for the redemption of his wife. Vipachano. So let us flip that around. Who says that this is the right thing? The way Rashi reads it is, mizonot tachat peirot. Let us say that mizonot are in exchange for peirot, and pirkona tachat maaseh yadah. How do you know which things to align which things? Which obligations come with which rights? How did you know which ones to align with which? So that's the Gemara's question here according to Rashi. On the other hand, whereas Tosfos later on Daf Nun Bet says the question's different, maybe the peirot should be neged kvura because he can't align them. Now, part of that's based on a question here as to who has the primary right over here. Is it that the woman is entitled to mizonot, and then she gives maaseh yadayim for those mizonot, and therefore she has a right to reject that and say, I won't take mizonot, and I'll keep my maaseh yadayim. Is that the way that it's set up? Or is it the other way around? Who's in control? So we know with regards to mizonot that the woman does have that right to say that you keep the mizonot and I'll keep my masei yadayim. So similarly over there, the ikar part of the takana is the zchut that she has to receive the mizonot. And therefore she can reject that zchut and keep her masei yadayim. On the other hand, when it comes to pirkona tachat peirot, seemingly it would be the same setup, which is that if the benefit is to her, which is the redemption, she can say, forget the redemption, I'm going to keep the peirot. But Tosafot over here says that that is not palatable, and therefore she doesn't have a right. Tosafot says, afagav deikar takana bishvil dida, even though the part of the takana here is for her benefit so that she gets redeemed, mikom akom eina yochola lomar eni nidate veni notene peirot. She does not have a right to unwind this or to reject this schut. And Tosafot says, v'yesh litein tam. We have to explain why that is in this case. He says, because because in the case where she says, I won't take mizonot, and I'll keep my masei yadayim, she does not undermine the entire takana. Because she can say, today, I won't take mizonot, I'll keep my masei yadayim. Tomorrow, she could turn the switch back on. That's not true with peirot and pirkona. Because the reason that she gets pirkona is because he gets peirot over her entire lifetime. If she rejects it, it unwinds the takana completely. Then Tosafot says, well, what happens even if she says, I'm going to take no mizonot my whole lifetime and keep my masei yadayim? We'd still say that goes through. So Tosafot then gives an additional reason, which is, kata yesh lomar delo matzi amra eni niftet. She can't say that I won't be redeemed. Shalot titma ben ovdei kochavim. Because we don't want her staying with the ovdei kochavim. Because what's going to happen in the end when she rejects this setup is that in all likelihood, she's going to get stuck in captivity and nobody's going to redeem her. And we don't want that. So the Ikar Takana is to ensure that she doesn't get stuck in captivity, and therefore she doesn't have a right to unwind that, because it's really an obligation of the Tzibur, and therefore the Tanai Beit Din locks her into this, and doesn't allow her to unwind it. Inami, Shani Peirot, Diadoki Yada, Vezuche Begufa Karka, Vamasei Yada, Enem Bain Bain, Toloshayach Lemir Zikabufa Gayadayim. So he says that when it comes to the Peirot Karka, therefore since they are extant, he has equal rights in the land to the woman. Since they're on par, therefore he has a rejection right of the woman, or a veto right for her to say, you don't get the peirot. And then masei yadayim, which is all on the come in the future, he doesn't have any right to say, oh, those belong to me, and therefore he can veto it because they don't exist yet. And therefore he doesn't have a veto right. So it's an interesting different ways that Tosafot takes an approach. He's certain that she can't unwind this tenai of redemption for peirot, and he gives three different reasons as to why. Either because that will undermine the takana completely, or because we don't want her stuck in captivity, or because peirot are extant, and therefore his level of ownership or veto rights are much higher here, and that's why he can reject that haskem where she says, don't eat the peirot, and I'll redeem myself. And obviously the last thing is ketubata, for kvurata, which is the dowry, not just the cork tuba, but it means the tosefet, the additional items that the father brings into the dowry, that is keneged the kvurata, and that's why the husband inherits the ketubah, or that dowry. So, Abam Rabbi, the answer to the question about why it's set up in this way is, tiknu matsui the matsui. They put things that are common with things that are common. Shenu matsui the shenu matsui, and things that are not common with things that are not common. So, according to Rashi's understanding over here, mizonot and masei yadayim, mizonot is something you need every day. Masei yadayim is something that can be produced every day. So, therefore, they are lined up with each other. On the other hand, pirkona is something that happens, hopefully never, but can happen once in a blue moon, and therefore captivity is matched up with peirot, which also is something that doesn't happen every day. Even if she owns a field that only has production or has benefits as a leaseholder in interim periods, it's not an everyday thing, and therefore it's matched up in that manner. Amarova, hai tana savar mizonot midoraita. We have a tana who clearly thinks that mizonot are mina Torah. And the real question is, we just brought a braito who suggests that seemingly mizonot are midrabanan, because we just said over here that everything was a takana. So he thinks that mizonot are midrabanan, and now Rava brings a tana that thinks that mizonot are midoraita, which is, detanya, she'ira. The posuk by an amai vriya says, zimacheret hikachlo, if this adon or his son takes another wife besides this amai vriya, she'ira, suta, ve'onata, lo'igra. He may not diminish from her the rights of a Jewish woman, which seemingly are she'ira, suta, ve'onata. So now the Braita says, detanya, she'ira, elu mizonot. Sheira is the right of the woman to mizonot. So it's clear here, it's doraita that's coming out of the pasuk. B'cheni hu omer, v'sheachlu she'er ami. Those that ate the she'er means the basar, the flesh of my nation. So you see that she'er is associated with the food. Kisuta kimashma'o. Kisuta means literally clothing that he has to provide for her. Onata zo ona hamura b'torah. This is the ona that is brought down in the Torah. That we'll get to later in this perek. But the demand that a woman has on her husband to provide her with intimacy. B'cheinu omer. It says by Yaakov when he makes the brit, the covenant with Lavan. Im taned b'notai. That if you afflict my daughters. Now as Tosfot points out, you have a difficulty over here because they're playing on the word inui. Inui is actually the abstaining from giving intimacy to the woman. It's the affliction caused by the abstention. So then using the word ona over here is almost the opposite. As Tosfot points out, that onata means that he may not withhold from her the intimacy that will cause her inui. And that the word actually has almost two meanings over here. The word inui or ona can both mean the granting of intimacy or the withholding of intimacy. And it can mean both depending on the context. And therefore, onata over here means ona or zman. That's one way to read it. Or inui, affliction. And depending on which way you look at it, whether it's the positive or negative formulation, it means either the granting of intimacy or the withholding of intimacy. And over here, onata means that he has to grant her intimacy. So according to this braita, you have three things midoraita that the husband is required to give to his wife. Mizonot, clothing, kesut, and ona, intimacy. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Sheira Zuona. He disagrees and says Sheira is the right of the woman to intimacy. Chen Omer, Ish Ish El Kol She'er Bisaro Lo Tigrevu Lagalot Erva. So you see the word She'er is used in the context of Erva or intimacy, and therefore Sheira is her right to intimacy. Ksuta Kimashma'o. Ksuta is literally Onata Ilu Mizonot. And Onata are the Mizonot. Chen Omer, that Hashem afflicted you and caused you hunger and gave you the man. But you see over there that it's dealing with Hashem's providing of sustenance or food for the people. And therefore the word inui again is used in the context of food. And that's the requirement of the husband to provide mizonot. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov omer, Sheira ksuta, lefum sheira ten ksuta. Sheira ksuta teaches you that according to her she'er, you give her ksuta. So that ksuta is the ikur obligation, which is he has to clothe her. And lefi she'era, according to her she'er, he will provide her clothing, which is shelo yitein la lo shel yelda lezakena. He shouldn't give a young woman's clothing to an older woman. Lo shel zakena leyelda, and not an older woman's clothing to a yelda. As Rashi explains over here, that an older woman needs lighter clothing because the burden is too heavy. And a younger woman needs heavier clothing because she's both fit and she enjoys the endowment and the warmth of it. And therefore he has to provide appropriate clothing based on the age of the woman. And here he's learning the word she'er, similar to what we learned before, which is she'er means basar, but not basar in the terms of achila, and not basar in terms of intimacy, but rather basar in terms of the ksut has to fit her. That it has to be properly fitted to her. She has to get the proper clothing for her. Ksuta v'onata. The connection between ksuta and onata is the fum onata ten ksuta. According to the time or the season of the year, he should provide her clothing. And therefore, if it's the winter season, he should give her heavier clothing. If it's the spring or the summer season, he should give her lighter clothing. Shelo yiten chadashim b'imot hachama. Shouldn't give her new clothing in the summertime, which are heavier or thicker. Below shchakim, and not worn clothing, b'imot hagashamim, which is colder, and there'll be thinner clothing. So he has to give her appropriate clothing. And therefore, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, seemingly, his whole pasuk is talking about ksut. But tell us what it says over here. Perish Rashbam, the Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, savar namid mizonot d'oraita. Even Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov agrees that mizonot are d'oraita, because he brings the remainder of the braita that shows that he believes that mizonot are d'oraita. And therefore, Tosfot leaves off with the tema as to who is the author of the original part of the Gemara here, that mizonot are takana de rabbanan. We have three shitot that are brought here in the Braita, and all three shitot believe that mizonot are deoraita. And therefore, Tosfot leaves it with an uncertainty as to who the author of this Braita is. On the other hand, the Ramban and others believe that the piece that we're going to do in tomorrow's Gemara, which is Tani Rav Yosef, who has a different interpretation of She'ira, he will be the author of this position that the Mizonot are Dirabanan, because he believes that only Kiruv Basar, only intimacy, is what is demanded Midoraita, but Mizonot and Ksut are all Midorabanan, according to the Ramban. According to all the other Rishonim, everybody agrees that Ksut is Doraita, and so the only question is Mizonot. So basically what comes out from that is that majority of Rishonim believe that Ksut is Doraita and Una is Doraita. Mizonot is this machloket, whether it's Doraita or Dirabanan. The Ramban believes that everything is Dirabanan except for Kiruv Basar, except for Ona. And Tosafot over here believes that everybody holds that Mizonot are Doraita, and seemingly Ksut and Ona as well. And he's left Betema as to where the Gemara comes up with the fact that Mizonot are Midirabanan, even though it's pretty clear that many places in Shas, the Gemara seems to indicate that Mizonot must be Dirabanan, because the woman is able to, again, trade her Masa Yadayim for the Mizonot. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Memched Amud Aleph.